And welcome to episode 61 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And this week we've got no cookie, but we are joined by Ono Video Games regular and the composer of our new theme tune, Martin Felder.
Hello. It's a pleasure to be back on.
Excellent. We've got some juicy news coming up. Going from Avatar Press finally comes to Comixology, a reboot looking set for a reboot. Vivendi Injunction given high ho by US heave ho, not high ho, heave ho by US judge, and New York Comic Con organizers stunt with attendee Twitter accounts. And our feature today is breaking street dates.
And we'll also be giving details for our Halloween competition for those of you who didn't hear all the details last week. But Avatar Press finally coming to Comixology. I'm probably the only person out of all you guys who's excited about this. Maybe I'm assuming. Am I assuming?
I saw Kieran Gillen's name there. I don't know. I'm still like that dude. Apart from that, I'm kind of not aware of anything. So
ever?
Yeah. I'm in a protective bubble from the entire world.
Sort of embryonic state.
Yeah, it's kind of weird to be. How are we communicating? Are you living inside this tiny box on my head? It's very strange.
I think it's that big black monolith.
Ah. Maybe I should kill it.
For those of you unaware, Avatar Press are a comics imprint. Obviously, they're independent and they tend to publish stuff that kind of pushes the censorship box quite a bit. In that there's not much censorship, and actually the storylines and material and everything's all quite graphic and violent. Not normally over-sexed, but certainly graphic and violent.
So like stabby time rather than sexy time?
Most of the time, yes. Mind you, Crossed, which is Garth Ennis's series, perhaps crosses boundaries on either side a bit.
Hey, crosses boundaries.
Oh, yeah.
I see what you did. Little joke.
I was trying. And then obviously Kieran Gillen's Uber, which started this year, is under Avatar Press and has come to Comixology as part of this deal. I'm really excited about this. I was quite frustrated. Was it last month we had Kieran Gillen's comics as the subject of the Cornwall Graphic Novel Group meet? And I really wanted to read some Uber, but at that point, the only way to get your hands on Uber was through physical copies. I have no comic book shops near me, and the first couple of runs of Uber kind of like ran out. So it was kind of hard to get hold of physical copies. But it's okay, because the meetings happen now, but at least in my own time, I can catch up on Uber so far via Comixology, which I'm quite happy about.
Rah.
So. Really. And they don't appear to be doing anything crazy about censorship either. I mean, because like I said, it's pretty graphic content and they appear to be okay with the nature of this stuff. So I'm hopeful that nothing else will actually happen to the content once it's on Comixology. But I'm also hoping that it obviously continues. And because like Uber's up to, I think, maybe issue 5 or something so far. And certainly it's the first 5 issues that are available via the Avatar Press section app.
With Comixology, because you're far more knowledgeable about their stuff than I am, has there ever been kind of anything about censorship with them? Or
we talked about it earlier this year, the comic, is it Saga? It was their interpretation of stuff to do with Apple's terms and conditions. And of course, Comixology has a version of its app available on the App Store, as well as like Android and just generally through a browser. And it was just kind of like this whole mix up over whether or not, you know, this particular issue of Saga was allowed to be published through stuff like Comixology and that. And it wasn't Comixology that pulled it. They were accused. It was the creators. So actually Comixology therefore then seems to be pretty reasonable with very mature subject matter. So,
which is as it should be, really.
Yeah. I'm going to move us on to our next story, because I'm sure there's at least one person who isn't me that could get a bit excited about this, the reboot looking set to be rebooted.
I'm not sure about excitement being the word.
Trepidation?
Horror?
I'm fascinated. Like, what are they... For me, my memory of Reboot is so completely tied to the kind of janky-looking visuals. And the idea of taking it out of that is such a strange idea to me. Like, obviously, to reboot it, they're going to, you know, change it all up, make it look all fancy and new. And I don't know if I'm ready for that, you know?
Well, the problem is the original series had the selling point of it being CG.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are so many now which are CG. It's no longer a gimmick.
It's not novelty at all. It's just another show, really.
Yeah, it's just something else. So what on earth are they going to do, which is, you know, going to be the selling point?
I mean, to be honest, I thought the concept of, you know, kind of the games kind of coming in, it's almost like the user is playing a computer game, and they're always kind of playing against the people in the system.
All the characters.
So like Enzo and Bob and whatnot and Dot.
Even though I watched the TV series as a kid on ITV, when it was, you know, the ITV Kids stuff in the afternoons, I don't remember it that well at all.
Actually, the complete same. I can remember it so, like, I can remember snapshots of it. Like, I can remember what it looked like, and I can remember, like, the feel of the show. I can't remember a goddamn thing about any of the characters or what happened on it. I just remember that show being, weirdly for me, sort of fever dreamy. Kind of just... A very strange looking show.
I think the one thing that sticks in my head about the series is when I think Enzo ended up losing in one of the games. And that was like the end of one series. And in the next series, he'd basically been, because I think as part of the lore of the series, if you lose in the game, then you kind of get dumped somewhere else, on the mainframe. Basically, he'd been searching for his home for so long that it actually kind of grown up and had become almost like a, you know, kind of mercenary with his dog and I think it's Andrea or whoever she was. And they'd all, like, grown up, and it's kind of really weird.
Hmm. I remember somebody I knew may have had some Reboot toys, like some figurines.
That sounds right. I remember there being a lot of figurines around. I don't know. I think it... kind of hard to draw any conclusions about the idea of reboot of this based on the fact that none of us can, you know, our memories of it collectively seem to just be like strange half-remembered fragments.
I think I was too old for it.
So when you saw it, it looked all a bit gimmicky, did it?
Well, I liked, it was still at that stage where it was nice that something was using CG, so I liked the fact it was CG. But I sort of observed it rather than watched it because it's like a mate of mine's younger brother would be watching it. And, you know, my mate was younger than me and his brother was, you know, a few years younger than me, you know, than him. So I just sort of, you know, saw it and say, yeah, that's cool that they're doing the CG.
Mm. I mean, I've got to admit, it's a bit like a situation with when the reboots of Thundercats came along. It's like, target audience is still kids, so I can't necessarily be that excited for it because I don't remember that much of the original, and B, because it's not going to be targeted towards my demographic anyway, so the likelihood of me actually sitting down watching it and enjoying it is actually, you know, lower.
Yeah, the only kids show which matters at the moment is Gravity Falls, so, you know, everyone should go and watch Gravity Falls. That's what I'm saying. y'all would love Gravity Falls.
I was gonna say one of our actual listeners who I know listens to us and will now probably dread that I've said that I know who he is and I read his blog post that he did today about the waiting for a reboot of Reboot. Hi Matt. Yes, it's your fault. He's really excited about it, and it was actually quite nice seeing his enthusiasm for the show coming back in some form. Apparently, it really did end kind of like on a cliffhanger, like you didn't really know what happened to anyone in it really at the end. I believe not that he covered this, but as far as I can tell, the series may have continued in comic book form online for like a while, but that,
so almost no one saw it then.
Yeah. But then that kind of all went silent sometime around, like the site went silent around 2009 or something. Next year technically marks the 20th anniversary of Reboot's launch, which is kind of scary.
I think in
oh, it'll just get worse from this point on, trust me.
I think in Reboot, Bub was meant to be like an antivirus program or something like that.
Yeah.
A Tron, you could say.
What was interesting was in Matt's observations about the series, and what happened to it over here is that obviously ITV had it, and they've shown it as part of CITV, and we got the first two seasons erratically, but there were actually two more series after that, and he suggests that the reason that we didn't get the other two series wasn't necessarily because they couldn't afford to pick it up, but it was because it was getting too violent for British children's audiences.
Bollocks.
What, wasn't this like a French-Canadian production or something like that? Or am I misremembering that?
It strikes me as the kind of thing that a French-Canadian children's animation production team would put together.
Oh, those French-Canadians. They're dodgy.
I mean, come on, Ulysses 31. Go on, there's something like that. And Barbar, actually, I think might have been French-Canadian. Barbar might have been French-Canadian as well. So,
now, you see, I've just got the Ulysses 31 music in my head. I'll be useless for over the next 5 minutes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We can say whatever we like now.
It's no Moomins.
Yeah, quick, say something about Nintendo.
No, did you say that it's no Moomins? Because I could totally get with that, yeah. But at the same time...
And when you say about Moomins, are you talking about the original weird European stop-motion thing with felt pieces?
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm talking about the cartoon. That's the cartoon is what I remember.
Oh, that new fangled thing. Yeah. No, trust me, the original Moomins, the original... which country is it from?
I want to say it's Scandinavian.
That sounds about right.
I don't know whereabouts. I want to say Swedish, maybe?
It was weird.
Oh, it was super weird.
I think it's Scandinavian, there might have been a Japanese influence at some point as well.
Yes. Well, I think it was a Japanese co-production, the cartoon Moomins. And that was fine. I remember, seeing a few episodes of that, and that was the kind of thing where you could still enjoy it. You know, the best cartoons, they can be, suitable for children, but they can be, family.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And Moomins was something like that. But, the original stop-motion felt pieces and tinsel and...
That sounds horrifying. I'm just, like, I wasn't aware that was a thing that existed, and now I'm kind of terrified, so...
Oh, hunt it down if you can.
I don't know if I want to.
It was great.
Let that live in my mind.
Do you want to hear something scary about Reboot? Apparently, this is according to Matt, there were references to things like The Evil Dead and Blues Brothers in the series at various points.
I know about like various references. I mean, obviously, with the games, they referenced a lot of games. Like, I think Mortal Kombat, they actually referenced. They did reference, I think, A Few Good Men as well at one point.
That's scary.
Yeah. To be fair, like, loads of kids' TV was doing that back then, you know? Like, it just makes me think of the Animaniacs with the extended Goodfellas reference, which, like, what kids got that? Like, yeah, exactly. No one got that. How could you? You know?
No, that should be remade, because that was awesome, Animaniacs.
Yeah.
I know Eric Cartman wouldn't agree, but...
I'm gonna move us on to our piece of business news for the week, it feels like. Well, actually, there's a lot of business news this week, but this particular piece of business news is to do with Activision Blizzard finally properly being able to go on sale to existing shareholders who are kind of with the company, so like Kotick Slot and everything, because Vivendi went and put an injunction in the US to say, no, we don't want it sold. And then a US judge last week was like, nah, they can sell it. So that means that the $8.2 billion sale of Activision Blizzard can now finally take place. It's meant to be happening tomorrow. Wait, so either tomorrow from when we're recording, so Tuesday, or sometime this week. It was funny. I was reading, of all things, an article on the Financial Times website. There was a blog piece by one of its key bloggers that was just kind of going, I don't agree with this sale at all, because it was just kind of like, oh, they're giving control over to people who essentially care about this as a games company. At least that was the tone of voice I was, you know, that's what I was reading from between the lines.
That sounds like the Financial Times, yeah.
It's like, let's not let people buy it so that they can go and do what it's meant to be doing, but hopefully better.
Have you considered pure capital?
pure capitalism.
It was just kind of interesting that obviously Vivendi went and put the injunction. I suppose in a way they didn't want the sale to happen because it wasn't happening on their terms. Yeah, you know, it was kind of being pushed through by potential sort of new shareholders or existing shareholders. But basically Vivendi, I mean, it's not like they had all the shares in Activision Blizzard, but it means that their shares go from obviously a controlling interest of 61% to just around 12% as a result of the sale going through.
Huh. Right.
So they'll still have a tiny, tiny bit, but not a controlling majority, unless everyone sells all their shares afterwards.
I mean, it does make me think, because Activision, a bit like EA, have been known for kind of caring more about money than customers and quality of games as well.
Activision? Surely not.
So could you imagine if they got snapped up by somebody that actually cares?
I'd love to be a multi-billionaire and just swoop in and buy Activision and then just cancel COD. just for shits and giggles.
They rebalance all the guns like every couple of weeks. It should be really funny.
Yeah. We need to change this so it's instead of 0.0003, it's 0.0031.
I wouldn't do that. I'd just be like, okay, guess what? Shotguns are incredibly powerful and everyone can jump to three times their own height now.
Good news! The rocket launcher is a paint gun.
Good news, I'm bringing back rocket jumping. I'm going to turn this into Quake. We're doing it.
There was the suggestion that as a result of the sale, there's a chance that people like Kotick and a couple of the others involved would be unjustly enriched, I think was the term used by the person who brought in the injunction, which was shareholder Douglas Hayes.
Everything I've heard about Kotick points to him being unjustly enriched at pretty much every stage.
But I do wonder, actually, because you mentioned about, oh, somebody sweeps in and buys. It does sound a bit like the shares aren't necessarily being sold at full value to like the new shareholders. So if somebody bigger then went in and bought like most of the stuff that the sort of shareholder party is basically buying up, then they would all walk away with quite a little tidy profit anyway. So, but I can't speculate further than that because I don't know how these things work.
You can't speculate on the speculation.
Nope. it's all a bit, you know, too
speculative.
Far. Yeah, it's funny that actually that it's all kind of speculative.
My understanding of shares is pretty much just a picture in my head of a bunch of dudes yelling buy and sell, and that's it, really.
I remember one of the most...
Watch Trading Places, there you go, that's all you need to know.
I knew it.
One of the most interesting bits of stock news I heard in recent weeks was from a purely IT aspect, and apparently I think it was when the New York Stock Exchange opened one morning, like a month or so ago. One of the other stock exchanges did this huge data dump on them in a way they weren't meant to, and it just kind of fucked everything up for like most of the day, which was kind of funny. So
I heard something earlier. I was reading a thing for my course about the Telegraph, as in the technology, not the paper. And it was talking about how I'm pretty sure it was the stock exchange when the Telegraph got, you know, was started being used for stocks and shares, then lots of big investment companies started moving from New York to Boston because, you know, it didn't matter where you were. It was, you know, synchronized everywhere. Mm. So they went up there. So especially with the telephone as well. So they made it so that you couldn't use telephones or the telegraph on the stock floor. You had to go to a designated area, which gave New York a 30-second advantage on Boston. which meant everyone moved back.
Wow.
Kind of an interesting little thing.
That's... But to be honest with that, I mean, it's like...
They were being techno dicks.
These days, they're building, like, huge extra data centres and laying down cable and stuff everywhere just to gain microseconds and stuff on time.
Yeah,
trade.
So, you know, the 30 seconds was a big deal. I mean, you know, if people were going to move cities based on that, then obviously it was a big deal even back then. So, it was interesting to me.
It just makes me wonder if instead of like having like the stock exchange where you're kind of selling and buying stuff, if you actually had like that as kind of a gaming network, that would be pretty damn awesome.
That'd be amazing. Well, it's, you know.
I'm just going to say, so are we under the impression though that the split of Activision Blizzard from Vivendi's controlling majority will not lead to the creation of better games by the company?
It's unlikely that it'd lead to it, but you know, there is, you know, hope.
Tiny bit of hope.
Things will happen. I mean,
a few things into the sun first.
I think it's pretty much, it depends on who buys it. But honestly, I can't imagine there's going to be a huge change here. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
We'll have to see what a definitive conclusion I've reached there.
Well, let's all suggest that Microsoft buys them or Nintendo buys them and then just rumour that.
Yeah.
We could start a rumour like that, and we could just put in the right amount of jargon from like the Wall Street Journal and the Financial Times, and somebody will probably buy it and then blog it, and then suddenly it'll become news within less than a day.
Can I just say that, you know, it would be awesome to be able to kind of do like an April Fool's joke.
Nintendo buys Activision.
Would it be? Knowing the internet as I do.
I've heard... I think, honestly, you need to make it sound like realistic. I reckon you could do one which makes it sound like Apple are going to buy something like that. I reckon I would buy, you know, I would consider legitimately if someone rumoured that Apple were going to buy a big games company. I would not be shocked. I would not refuse to believe that.
Can you imagine the fanboy reaction?
Oh, I can. And that's why we should do it.
Apple or even Nintendo being a more, you know, on street, you know, mainstream, you know, gaming company, but it's not where the, you know, the Call of Duty franchise is at its strongest. Could you imagine just the reaction if Apple or Nintendo are going to make Call of Duty exclusive on theirs?
You know, corporate company are going to buy Activision.
You know, it'd be really cool to do though. Is to basically set up not just one rumor, but about three or four different rumors that cannot coincide all together, and just spread them out.
And see which
rumor wars,
and see which one wins out.
Yeah.
In the flame war that will thus ensue.
Let's break the stock exchange.
Okay, I think Grand Theft Auto 6 will be exclusively on next gen.
I think Grand Theft Auto 6 is going to be exclusively handheld.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Okay.
On 2DS, not 3D.
Oh, yeah. My.
I think the next GTA will be on SNES only.
Mm.
I'd love that.
Confirmed, actually.
Oh, MUD 7 zoom effects. Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, I've heard that, let's see, the next GTA is going to be exclusive to iOS. Now, by that point, which iOS will they be on? I'm gonna hazard a guess with iOS 14.
And combat is going to be exclusively done via ping pong.
Yes. Next GTA is going to be exclusively board game.
Next GTA is going to be an arcade special.
Next GTA is going to feature playable women characters. Jokes!
You...
Okay, I'm going to move us on to the last bit of news we've got for this week. Which
that was fun.
I know, but the women one just kind of... I want to end on a high. New York Comic Con has just been and gone, and with it, lots of geeky news that we could have talked about this week, but now I wanted to talk about this PR mistake that happened as a result of...
Mistake is being very...
Well, I say mistake. Misjudgment? There we go. This misjudgment by New York Comic Con organisers, in which attendee Twitter accounts were used as a means of sending out automated tweets when people checked in. This is because of the process that some people might sign up to things when buying tickets, where they might, rather than create a new account from scratch with a particular service provider, they may instead choose to use a social login. And they may not read the sort of service agreement that comes with using this social login, which says, oh, well then, this means you're agreeing to the provider tweeting or posting on your Facebook wall on your behalf.
You know, I don't think it does. I really don't think it does.
A lot of them say that when you sign up. Like even
oh, yeah,
lots
but they
of apps.
Can go to hell.
Yeah.
You agree to this. It's saying, no, I don't. Get out of my account.
Unfortunately, though, a lot of people did obviously agree and didn't think anything would be done with this agreement. Because, quite frankly, no one's ever... Most apps haven't had the audacity to just kind of tweet random crap that you haven't had a chance to sort of supervise first before perhaps going, let's put it out there.
More accurately, like, no big app has done that. You know, you expect it if you sign up to some shady little thing. But, you know, if it's like a... If it's just logging in to buy some tickets, you're like, yeah, sure, I'll just use my Twitter account. It's a couple of clicks, fine. And it'll come up with permission to post tweets. And you'll be like, well, it'll probably do it if there's, you know, something on the site which says tweet this. And then you click it.
Or,
you know, it's
or it'll be, no, I've just bought a ticket at Comic-Con. I can't wait
yeah.
to buy yours. You know, click here. Or, you know.
Yeah, you might expect something like that, perhaps, but, you know, to what? Actually promote is a bit weird.
Yeah,
I can just imagine people getting into trouble because they've taken off sick days from work or they've pretended to be off on a holiday, you know, when this happens. And
then they activated the purse at New York Comic Con and all became unraveled in their life.
Yeah, I'm looking at cosplay girls in New York. Is it? Uh-huh.
But also I'm ill, so...
So very ill.
Having a terrible time at New York Comic Con.
To be honest, though, I wonder how many people who went to Comic Con this weekend will come back to their homes with Expo Con Lurgy. You know, the Lurgy that always happens.
Oh,
yeah, but then you just go up to your boss and be like, no, I'm ill for real this time.
You
know? And then they're like, no, you're coming in, or you're fired.
I'm more ill. It's developed.
No, you're coming in or you're fired. But it was kind of a bit much. Like, the style of the tweets and the positive sentiment within them was perhaps more over the top than what the Twitter account owners would perhaps, you know, have done themselves.
What actually was it saying? What were the tweets themselves?
It was kind of like, oh, I've just got to New York Con, blah, blah, blah. And then a series of hashtags that they were obviously pushing officially to, like, to do with the con.
That's really dodgy, though. I mean, it's one thing posting on another's behalf, but to use hashtags as well, that's just, you know, getting... That's just
I want to say it's dirty for some reason.
It is. It does feel dirty.
Oh, wow. I just actually looked at one of the examples of one of the tweets. Apparently, they were not all the same, but things like, so much pop culture to digest, can't handle the awesome, hashtag NYCC, which, who speaks like that of the marketing people? So much pop culture to digest.
So generic thing.
Yeah.
You know what? As part of a company that perhaps is commissioned at times to write social media messaging for businesses who are trying to sell to other businesses, perhaps messaging like that happens more often than people realise kind of language.
I'm sure it does. I just can't believe so much pop culture to digest. That's such a great sentence.
Maybe it was meant to... Maybe they thought they were tweeting on behalf of, like, an ironic-sounding hipster.
I reckon we should just take the piss and just be like, I'm back home. So much popular culture to digest at home.
I would be so much pop culture, but I'm over that.
To be honest, with the type of costumes cosplayers may or may not have been prancing around in, unless there were some tits and ass ones in. then the entire series of tweets would have been completely, you know, invalidated anyway, if no one had stumbled across this great conspiracy against people's Twitter accounts.
So you're saying they should have thrown in some, like, gross, pervy ones in there as well?
Yeah.
So it'd just been like, oh, I'm looking at a butt at Comic-Con. Hashtag NYCC, hashtag butts.
I think having been at the, you know, the cosplay bit of, you know, the Eurogamer Expo, I think if anyone was doing a truthful tweet of, you know, attending cosplay, it would have been awkward geek silence. Hashtag cosplay.
Can you imagine if, like, racist rallies and that did the same?
I've just checked into my past at this Ku Klux Klan meeting.
So much pop culture to digest. Hashtag.
So much white culture to celebrate.
Oh, God, did you hear about the Ku Klux Klan meet that got cancelled as a result of the US government shutdown?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What?
There was meant to be a meet the other week in one of the national sort of, I don't know if national park monuments. Oh, I think it was at Gettysburg, which is obviously one of the main grounds for one of the sort of turning battles of the Civil War. And they had like a permit and stuff from obviously a government, local government authority or parks authority or something. And because no one was there to enforce it, they weren't allowed to hold the rally.
So, ultimately, a good thing, the shutdown.
But yeah, so, but if government had been around that day, then apparently, obviously, then the rally would have been fine.
Sure, on the one hand, patients are being denied care and people are being starved out because they can't get the money they need to survive. But on the other hand, at least these racists didn't get to have their park party. So,
although strange you should mention that, because I was reading last night on the Twitters, there were a few protesters who turned up outside the White House last night, our time last night.
Yeah.
And I think either Palin was there or this was, you know, prompted by Palin. And at least one of them was waving a Confederate flag.
Of course they were. I mean, it's not shocking at all.
Yeah, as a few people were pointing out, you're waving a Confederate flag in front of the White House with a black president inside, and you should maybe look up some of your Confederate history.
No, that's the thing. I feel like someone who's waving a Confederate flag, I mean,
yeah, you really don't know what you're waving if you're waving a Confederate flag. If you're going to say, I'm not racist, but I'm just waving this flag.
Because I think they do know. It's dog whistle.
Yeah, it's all coded. Such and such an American, such and such socialist.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
No, what you're really saying is he's not white and we don't like that.
Dog whistle racism, innit?
Yeah, it's just, no, I find you deeply creepy and weird. But yeah, I couldn't believe that someone was actually waving a Confederate flag in front of the White House in 2013.
Gross.
Meanwhile, back at Comic-Con.
Yes, but there were no Confederate flags. Unless someone was doing Dukes of Hazzard, in which case it's fine.
The one bit of geek news that I heard that I was vaguely interested in, which I think was announced there, is either that or they didn't announce it there, but they announced it today, which would make it kind of weird. Ghost Rider's coming back after having been cancelled earlier this year by Marvel. It's coming back March next year, which will be like a year, I think, after it was cancelled. And it's a complete and utter reboot. New guy. He's not going to be on a motorbike. He's going to be into his muscle cars.
Is his skull going to be on fire?
Probably.
That's the important part.
That doesn't make sense to me because you don't ride a car. You drive a car. You ride a motorbike.
Ghost driver.
I have to admit, in the...
And ghost driving is already a thing, so...
In the... film, the last, is it Spirit of Vengeance was the last Ghost Rider film with Mr. Cage. He does turn a great big truck or something into his ride.
Of course he does.
As you do.
Nick Cage can do anything automatic he wants. Tweet for when he gets in the car.
There should be an automatic tweet the moment obviously his transformation process takes place. This is Nicolas Cage Ghost Rider, not any other kind of Ghost Rider. And so it kind of like tweets, oh no, I'm burning up, hashtag something. And what would be a Ghost Rider hashtag?
Skull's on fire right now.
And then there'll be an intermediary tweet with the same hashtag, and then there'll be the full sort of pennant stare themed end tweet of he's Ghost Rider now, and just kind of full
Ghost
stages.
Rider, use pennant stare. It's super effective. Hashtag awesome.
Hashtags Penitster. Oh man, Penitster. Does anybody else know about Penitster? Do I need to educate anyone?
I've slightly. Not. What?
Isn't that the companion of Teller?
Not quite. No. Penitster is like one of the main abilities in various incarnations that Ghost Rider has, where he looks obviously at somebody, and if you've been a bad, bad human or galaxy devouring overlord,
or perhaps a very naughty puppy,
he will look into your eyes and will essentially scorch your very existence from your body and your soul and everything, and send you on your way to hell.
Wow, can't believe I'm here on my new motorbike. So many souls to send to hell. Hashtag so much Ghost Rider.
What's great though is how the one time Ghost Rider did Penitster on Galacticus. That didn't go well for Galacticus. Really didn't go well for Galacticus.
Galactus.
Is it Galactus or Galacticus? I can never remember.
I believe it's Galactus.
Galactus?
Galacticai.
That yes. Sounds dirty.
Meanwhile, I did hear ramblings, I think, over the weekend about the Fantastic Four reboot. So, you know.
Rumblings.
Rumblings.
Is that the hashtag?
Looked at a glass of water, it started wobbling. You're like, wait.
No. The glass of water was obviously, you know, there were waveforms in that. I then put my ear to the ground to listen, because, you know, I'm in Cornwall, so I'm a bit closer than you guys to America. And listened to the ground.
You know, I'm not sure about how scientific this is.
And listened to the ground to feel the vibrations of the Fantastic Four film reboot rumours making their way across the Atlantic.
Emily, is it true that you can actually see America from your house? Because that's what I've heard about Cornwall.
It's one of the defining things, really, isn't it?
Yeah, yes. I mean, that's what they say. Go to Cornwall, go and see a beach and have a look at America, see what they're doing over there, you know, see what they're up to.
You're not waving any Confederate flags, are you?
A lot of people on their mobile phones wondering what's going on Twitter over New York.
Because, you know, if you are, we're taking the colonies back.
Yeah, you're like, what's going on, America? And they're like, there's so much pop culture to digest. Thanks, America.
Okay, I'm gonna move us on to a feature story for this week, because I think that's a good place to do this. And Pokemon XY came out last week. Yay! Yeah.
Cool.
And I was the only one excited out of all these guys.
I'm hella excited. I want to play some, but like, I want to play lots of games on the DS, but I don't bloody have one. So that's pretty much the end of my excitement, you know.
Do you have a Vita?
No, I don't have any handhelds, so, you know.
Okay.
I do.
Is that a rule?
No, it's just a... If the rule is I haven't got any money to buy them, then yeah, I suppose. But
harking back to the last bit, Google Maps is disappointing. There is no way to calculate the Truro Cornwall, United Kingdom to New York. You just cannot get directions. Damn you, Google Maps! You failed me.
It'd take you to somewhere to buy a boat.
Or the shipping route of some big sort of like containers company or something. That could have worked too. Or an airport.
See, now if we had like a large tunnel underneath the sea, like what we do with the Eurostar one.
That, oh God, no.
To America.
No.
I was just curious about with the curvature of the Earth.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Pokemon X and Y, but not
specifically. It's actually a general theme. The game officially came out on Saturday. We were talking last week about some poor Japanese people. I say poor Japanese people. Someone being lucky enough that his friend was stupid enough to give him a copy early of one of the games, and then Nintendo kind of coming in kind of heavy-handed, like, to retrieve the game. I say heavy-handed. They just, you know, sent someone on the ground to retrieve the game.
I can just imagine a sort of affable Yakuza.
That is basically Nintendo.
Yeah. It's just, would you mind terribly putting that back?
I don't know if I'm going to, Nintendo. They're like, okay.
I really think you should.
Like, you won't like the next step, you know.
So it was come outside. And then on Friday, what do I see? Tweets suggesting that Game have broken the street date for Pokemon X and Y.
I don't think it's as much Game as it is.
It was everyone, it seemed, eventually. Once I sifted through the Quagmire. Wait a minute.
What?
It seemed like it wasn't just them. It might have been a HMV or two. And obviously the indies were apparently just flagrantly ignoring the street date for the game. Because that's what they do, apparently.
Because they could. Some of them just could. It's like, go on then. Yeah. Yeah.
But how?
Well, you want a copy, you've got the money, I want money.
But how do people? But how do people feel about when street dates are broken? I mean, it's one thing when perhaps somebody like Amazon are perhaps a little bit over enthusiastic on posting something, which I know most people wish happened more often. Normally, stuff could be late.
It used to be nice when some of the online retailers I used would do that, but less so now.
Yeah, they don't tend to do that now. I'm still bitter over the fact that my copy of Hesitation Marks, the latest Nine Inch Nails album, was several days late, having asked for, you know, first class delivery.
Yeah, can I have Uber get here now? And then, nope.
How is that album, by the way?
It's a very good album. It's extremely positive in comparison to his earlier work, which is no surprise because he's gotten older, does some more Hollywood soundtracks and stuff now, so he's got a bit more of a regular income and has thus had a chance to mellow out a bit. So, but anyway.
He's not on heroin a whole bunch now, so
helps. Like, you know,
that would do it.
Chilled out some.
Yeah, but anyway, street dates.
If it's coordinated, if say everyone is saying okay, we'll do it on Friday, and then if say you know one big shop like a supermarket or a games retailer says it's Wednesday, here, have your copies, and it's on sale generally, then that's a bit of an issue because everyone else has, you know, tried to stick to it. But if it's just the occasional copy slipping through in the post, you know, a day early or so, then I don't really see an issue.
Well, I think it's kind of strange because I work for a retailer, I won't say who it is, but we're actually physically barred from selling them. So they won't actually work on the system until they're switched on.
Which is one way of doing it.
Yeah, so we physically can't actually sell a copy.
Because when I've walked into a shop and I've got something early, sometimes, and you know, this is going back years, but things like, you know, I'd buy special editions of, you know, whatever Star Trek series, you know, first episode or last episode or, you know, that kind of thing. And I'd get them early. It would be down to staff not knowing.
Yeah.
It would just be down to mistake. So it's not as if, you know, I'd walk into like a WH Smith's and, you know, get a collector's edition or something for, you know, the normal price about 2 days early because it's WH Smith's being, you know, all nefarious. It would just be someone doesn't know and they've got stock there and someone's asked for it and it's not out yet. They don't know why. It rings up until fine.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's just it's in back and they're like, well, why haven't we put this out yet? And no one tells them. So whatever.
I think that may have happened with me a week on Saturday when I got hold of Mark Kermode's book like 5 days early, his latest book.
Things, honestly, right. Just what this really teaches us is street dates are, I mean, not teaches us, I'm sure we already know, but like street dates are completely arbitrary. Like they have the stock. I personally have no problem with them selling it. I mean, I guess it's a little irritating if you queue up on the day that it's supposed to come out and it all sold out the day before, but I mean, it's not a huge deal. If you're the kind of person who's queuing up on the day, then probably you would have caught the news that it was available the day before, because if you're that excited about it, then you probably would.
There we go. I think with the Pokemon instance, it's a multiple factor type thing, because obviously it was a lot, you know, it wasn't just like the day before, it was like a couple of weeks or...
No.
No, it was at least a week or so, wasn't
no.
it?
No. It was just the day before.
The original one.
The original one. The incident in Japan. Are you talking about? Are you talking about? What are you talking about?
Well, the guy that got sold like Pokemon X from his like mate or something like that, and It was not the day before.
No, it was weeks before, but you were making it clear that that was a particular incident that you were referring to.
Well, Christ! On file 11016...
I just want to flag up the fact that you're saying Pokemon, which is weirding me out.
Sorry.
I can't handle it, man.
Pokemans.
Pokemans, yeah. That's the correct pronunciation.
But yeah, the other factor involved was the fact that the guy was actually publishing, you know, kind of screenshots and video and whatnot.
Yeah, that's where you suddenly go from, you're a lucky bastard, to, no, now you're taking the piss.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone's going to come and deal with this. Like, mm-hmm. You know.
I think what became particularly not so great about the street date being broken by major retailers last week was the fact that they were using social media to talk about it.
Well, to actually say that they're breaking the street.
Yep.
Yeah, that's you know, you don't see a lot of that. Usually it'll just be it's getting sold, but you know.
Yeah, someone says I walked into my local Argos and got this.
Exactly. You know, someone will tweet it, it'll get retweeted a bunch, and then probably the person who actually sold it will get in a little bit of trouble. But I mean, you know, it's rare that it will be a company as a whole just being like, hey, yeah, guess what? Breaking street date. It's happening.
Yeah, now you're taking the piss. I used to order stuff. Early 360 games, like Ubisoft and things like that, they'd publish the Asian market version a week or so before the European one. So I'd pre-order those from PlayAsia. And I get those. And I'm going, oh, the new Splinter Cell's coming out at the end of this week. I say, yeah, I'm already playing it.
Well, then I guess you're pretty much in the same boat as like when journalists get it in advance, you know?
Yeah.
That's the thing. You know, we pretend it's a, or we act like it's kind of a big deal for them to break street date, but people are already playing this thing. It's not, it just means that it's more of the public playing it. And does it make a huge difference to the sales? I don't think so.
I don't know if it necessarily. I would say there's the potential for it making issues with the sale. So obviously, the longer it's on sale within a week, that's been you know, that sales are being sort of gauged for, then it means that you would technically have perhaps an unfair advantage over games by competitors being released that week, who perhaps that somehow those were, you know, they did stick to the street date, so the copies sold. Therefore, would only be counted from the Friday to the Sunday before the results are released on the Monday.
Bearing in mind the amount of release dates which actually appear on a Tuesday nowadays is actually getting more and more prevalent, which is kind of worrying.
But then I think at that point, like, Nintendo don't crap a damn. There's not really any legal, you know, legal issue with that. It's not like the other companies are going to be like, hey, you impacted our sales. We're going to sue you. It's not going to make any real difference to them.
I've just thought of a situation where breaking street dates would be a hell of annoying for certain types of developer. Well, if your game has online infrastructure that you haven't fully, like perhaps the review stuff was kind of on like a beta, at least for the online. You know, they like it was proper review copies with a debug system perhaps potentially needed, but if it was kind of like, oh, the online infrastructure isn't quite there yet to deal with several hundred thousand players, could be a problem.
Then I guess the thing is they very rarely, like usually if something has a big online component, then the servers crash on the first couple of days. That's just what happens. And one of the ways which I've heard suggested in the past to like combat that is to make it so, especially with like MMORPGs, or you know, just MMOs in general, then one of the ways I've heard suggested to combat that is to make it so there's like a rolling release date or like rolling kind of dates for people to be able to actually get online. Yeah. And in that way, I guess, you know, it sort of feeds into that, you know, because I doubt it's regularly going to be nothing and then the day of release they put it up, unless there's some spectacular screw-ups in the company, because that's not practical, because surely they would put it up for review copies, I guess. I mean, I don't know. These are all very specific use cases, I guess. So,
I mean, another example is when the last season of Doctor Who was kind of given out in America before.
The episode
and they had to kind of be like, look, you know, just
Be nice.
Don't do any spoilers on the internet and you'll get something good.
Imagine how disappointed the Doctor would be in you.
And then
spoilers, sweetie.
I'm just trying to think because obviously the retail environment now is a lot more competitive than it previously was due to things like the frigging recession. I hate using it as an excuse for things, but quite frankly, the high streets become some form of trench warfare land between obviously retailers that sell the same kind of stuff.
It does feel like it.
You know, and so if you can get a competitive edge on your enemies by perhaps breaking the street, so the retailer that can't sell stuff early because they've got, you know, stuff on the system which stops them from selling it early will be undermined by the retailer that can do whatever the hell they want.
I mean, another factor involved is also because they know that people are so eager to get something like Pokemon X that if they do break street date, they could actually raise the price by a couple of quid and they'll still pay it. Which is, you know, quite sad.
Price gouging, I guess, but yeah. I bet there are, you know, legal agreements to prevent that, though, so.
Well, I'd hope so.
No. Or bundle it with something crap.
Yeah, have a t-shirt.
Hello, game.
I was still gutted when we pre-ordered Bayonetta to get the special, what is it, the stiletto boot gun?
It was the Scarlet Witch gun.
And
Scarborough Fair.
I was kind of wondering where it was when Emily went to pick it up, and it's like, oh, it's a digital thing. It was like,
no, it wasn't.
Why would I want a digital boot?
But it wasn't a digital boot. It was an actual thing.
Yeah,
and
it was
statuette. I've seen somebody with the damn thing, which they got from their pre-order. So we were cheated out.
Yeah.
Of a pre-order item that we had every right to. We went there early. It wasn't like they were going to be out of God knows what, and yeah.
That's bullshit.
I think you should just kill everyone.
With a stiletto boot.
Yeah, just to prove the point.
Hey.
I had to make my own, and unfortunately it was lethal. If I'd been given one, it wouldn't have been.
You could have stopped this game.
Yes.
So everyone's actually cool with street dates being broken.
Ish. Yeah, as long as it's not too far in advance.
I'm absolutely fine so long as I get it. If someone else gets it and if I can't, there's hell to pay.
Well, I mean, it's very rare these days that a game will actually go out of stock, like everywhere in town. Like, say, for example, last time, obviously, well, recent example was GTA 5. On the Xbox 360 version, you could not find a copy of that game. You know, it's like anywhere within, I think, well, about a week-ish of launch. And it has popped up since. So
I've been playing GTA 5 now with you.
Sorry?
I've been playing some GTA 5 now.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. I'm still getting through Wind Waker HD.
And
I'm very proud of the fact still that the first OMVG podcast we did after it came out, none of us have got it. And I still think none of us have got or played it. We're not going to play that game.
I don't feel like people are missing out on much. I'm kind of disappointed by that because I kind of like the story of 4.
The story of 4.
And I'm just a bit disappointed about how slow things seem to be going in 5. It's like all I seem to be able to do at the moment is like it's either titty bars or tennis, and it's just kind of like, oh.
I have not done either because I am a nice man.
Well, you've not played any tennis.
I've not played any tennis. I've hit someone with a tennis ball, and a golf club, but I've.
But you're a very nice man.
And I escaped from police in a golf cart.
But you're a very nice man.
But I'm a very nice man. Just call me Nice Trevor.
Honestly, play Saints Row 4. That's what I'm saying. That's the game.
I just can't quite get on with Saints Row.
I love Saints Row 4. It's so good. That's the problems, but not the problems it has are not nearly as big as the problems GTA 5 apparently has. So I'm going to, you know.
Whereas my PlayStation Plus things on the Vita have distracted me from GTA 5.
I think sorry, going back to the whole
the thing we're
street
talking
dates about. Thing, street dates thing. I think it's actually quite interesting because obviously with stuff like Steam, While you can, you know, kind of download and install games beforehand, you cannot actually, you know, activate them and play them until like that set date. Which,
to be honest, is
that kind of giving brick and mortar retailers, you know, kind of a slight edge there, maybe?
Maybe. But,
well, not really, seeing as if you bought a game that was Steam activated, you know, if it relies on Steam, it will still require it to be switched on, so far as I understand it.
That's true. I kind of like that model, because then that means that, obviously, you've got people who've pre-ordered the game, they've hopefully downloaded it at differing times prior to the game's actual launch, which means that you're not going to have a whole bunch of people jamming up your servers trying to download the game at the same time. Or at least it won't be as bad.
Yeah, it won't be as bad. There'll still be like people that's like, "Ooh, I've seen that on sale, and I've seen that's meant to be good. Ooh, it's out today. Got some cash. Yeah, why not?"
And I think also, I mean, I don't know exactly how the preload process works, but there's usually like an extra download once it actually unlocks, which isn't going to be nearly as big. It's not going to be the couple of gigabytes that the main game will be. But you know, I think it's basically to stop piracy, because, you know, they.
Yeah, you wouldn't want the whole code on the system just sitting there waiting to be unencrypted by some hacksaws people's.
I guess they take out like one in every 10 zeros and leave all the ones in. And that's how they do it. That's some real technical talk there, if anyone's listening.
It takes the stuff out and then they put it back in and it make it go.
Yeah, yeah. That's, again, very technical.
I can't help it. There's in the back of my head, I'm trying to remember whether there was an instance of street dates being broken with something in sort of like Xbox 360, PS3 sort of generation. And because people started playing it early, they might have had accounts suspended or something. I get the feeling something happened.
There are rumours each time. There are people who crop up. It was the same with Halo 4, with Halo Reach, GTA 5. I saw people popping up online and saying, "I've just had my account suspended just for playing this game early." And then with most of them, it turns out just for playing this game early and having a shitload of piracy. But for some reason, I thought no one would bloody notice because I'm thick.
See, that's the thing, because, you know, with all the reviewers and all the review copies that get distributed, then obviously there are people playing it early. So I doubt they authenticate individual accounts, because if I understand the review copy process correctly, I'm sure it's different depending on how high security said game is. It gets sent out to sites who then send it to reviewers. So it's not like they would be authenticating individual, like, Xbox accounts or whatever. So
I think depending on the service and depending on the publisher, there are there's like a press version of some of the online services. And they have their own servers and their own sort of sandbox, you know, if a game requires it, and that's turned on early so people can, you know, piss about with it.
Yeah. And so
and so they can avoid any issues, you know, like having to play with Joe Bloggs who tries to repeatedly run them over even though they're trying to alter some settings in GTA 5 online. I'm not speaking personally. I seem to be ragdolling around the place. All right, excellent. some random 12-year-old has just ran me over. Yeah, that's great.
I suppose what kind of annoyed me a bit about the street dates for Pokemon X and Y being broken last week was there I was waiting patiently for my pre-order to come through the post. Yeah, it wasn't me. I was waiting for my pre-order patiently to come through the post. The pre-order I'd obviously already paid for, so it wasn't like I could just suddenly drop it and I'll get it from somewhere else. It, you know, it's like if you pre-order from, like, as long as you haven't had to put money down, but then that's the thing, actually, if you've had to put money down. You'll probably, if somebody else starts selling it early and you've had to put money down at a store, what are you going to do with your pre-order?
Burn it down. Maybe.
Okay.
Be annoyed. Be righteously annoyed.
But
mostly because it's not the store you pre-ordered it from that's selling it early.
Or you'll get some stores that'll be like, "Oh, you've pre-ordered it with us. You're the only ones who get it early." And then the regular people can't buy it. And I've heard that happening. Haven't seen it, but I know it's happened recently.
To be honest, I don't actually pre-order games. The only thing that I've pre-ordered ever, well, personally anyway, is the Wii and the Wii U.
With some games.
True.
the only thing I pre-ordered in about the last year or two was probably Bioshock Infinite on Steam.
And I pre-ordered Bioshock Infinite.
And that was because they had extras for, you know, if you pre-ordered, you have these games for free. And it's like, they were games I wanted anyway. Hurrah! Yeah.
They gave me a free copy of XCOM, which I haven't played yet, and I think I enjoyed XCOM more than Bioshock Infinite and the balance.
I really liked Bioshock Infinite. And
I liked it a lot, but I had to... It took a lot of reflection and, like, coming back to it afterwards and reading what other people said about it, and then I realized, oh, that game has a lot of problems. Oh, no. And then I sort of went back to it, and, yeah, not so much. Like, yeah, that game doesn't age.
Okay.
I could talk about this, but I think Emily's trying to wrap it up. So
I think, I wanted to say now that we've come to the end of this street date discussion where I've decided that, okay, fine, it's sort of okay, but I'm still not happy when I've pre-ordered. as that, I wanted to give the details. We are currently running a competition between Nerds and Hex. It's been hosted over on Hex Dimension, and it's our Halloween competition for this year. The prizes are a used but in good condition edition of the original George A. Romero sort of Dead trilogy, so, you know, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, and Day of the Dead. And this particular reason, I know it's a used copy, we didn't get you a new one because we wanted to get this particular version because it's got some cool additional scenes for Night of the Living Dead, which they filmed when they did the 1990 or 1991 remake of the original film, where Barbara isn't Wimpy, but that's not the version we've got. We've got the one here that's the original plus extra scenes. And also The Shining, the novel by Stephen King, that's brand new, plus its new sequel, Dr. Sleep, obviously brand new, and very much a huge-ass hardback. Which, you know, if you do find yourself trapped in a building with a deranged killer, could be used as a weapon. I'm looking over it now. I think it's weaponizable. So head on over to the page that we'll be linked to in the episode notes on the NerdAssemble blog in order to enter the competition where you'll be asked to describe in 200 words or less. It doesn't have to be 200 words. You could use less words. Your main tactics for surviving a zombie apocalypse. The competition will be... is open until midday on Friday the 1st of November, and it is only open to UK residents who are aged 18 or over. Because, like, the Trilogy of the Dead's 18 rated, so I'm afraid we need you to be 18 or over.
PAL.
Yeah, PAL, hence the UK residents part.
Yeah, and we're responsible responsible adults who can't speak properly. And yeah, none of you 12-year-olds are watching 18-rated stuff. Nah.
We don't want to get told off by your parents, darn it. Okay.
Because we're scared.
You're very scared. Okay. So that's all we've got time for this week. And it's goodbye from...
Martin at Bionic Sheep. Check out my website, Ono Video Games. Or you can check out my music page if you like the music on this podcast, bionicsheep.tumblr.com.
And it's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I have a website, portfolio site, paul-blewett.com, and I'm on Twitter as Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at EK6891. You might also want to have a look at drowninginmultimedia.co.uk. You can find Nerds Assemble over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. Plus, we're on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. And don't forget to check out Hex Dimension, where you can enter the bloody competition.
And it is bloody.
It's very bloody.
Dead bloody.
And are we still looking for content makers?
Yes.
If you happen to be one.
If you happen to be one, do stop by. But that is all. Good night.
Good night.
Bye.